This hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by Robbins & Company Structural Moving and Foundation Repair. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. Producer Darren, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So NFL owners unanimously approved a brand new policy on dealing with players who might want to protest during the national anthem, players who might want to stay seated or take a knee. And I think the policy mostly gets it right. Players will now be given the opportunity, the choice, to stay in the locker room during the national anthem or go out on the field. Now, if you're out on the field, though, you have to stand. You can't sit down. You can't kneel. You can't protest. You can't disrespect the flag, whatever that ends up meaning according to this policy, because that part is a little bit unclear. And if you violate this policy, not only can you get an automatic fine, but so can staff members, so can the team in general. Roger Goodell explains what he wants out of this new policy.
From our standpoint, this is a great opportunity to continue that partnership with our players and keep the focus on the progress and the programs that we think are so important in the communities. We're proud of that support, and we think that that's how change is really going to be made.
Such a passionate speech.
Clearly, our objective as a league and to all 32 clubs, which was unanimous, is that we want people to be respectful at the national anthem. We want people to stand. That's all personnel, and make sure that they treat this moment in a respectful fashion. That's something that we think we owe. We have been very sensitive in making sure that we give players choices, but we do believe that that moment is an important moment and one that we are going to focus on.
So President Trump was on Fox and Friends this morning, and he supports this particular policy.
I don't think people should be staying in locker rooms, but still, I think it's good. You have to stand proudly for the national anthem. Well, you shouldn't be playing. You shouldn't be there. Maybe you shouldn't be in the country.
Now, people, of course, are taking that last line there and saying, oh, he wants to deport NFL players. No, I think it was very clear. He's saying that if you don't like this country, you shouldn't live here. That's what he's saying. Now, I suppose you can call it a little bit simplistic, and I suppose it is. But let's not go crazy. Sorry, I know I'm talking to some folks out there who are just unhinged every single time the president speaks. So why exactly is the NFL doing this? Why are the teams doing this? And we should point out that apparently the 49ers owner abstained from the vote. So it was technically unanimous in that sense, but he abstained. So the reason they're doing this is because the protests hurt the league. There's no doubt about that. Over the last two seasons, they've seen a decrease in viewership. They've seen less money presumably being spent on the teams, on the stadiums, on the advertising for these particular games, because less people are watching it. And so that took its toll. And I know that there were a lot of people who were in support of the players taking a knee saying, oh, no, that this didn't hurt the NFL at all. Of course it did. And this proves it did. The NFL would not be taking this position if it helped, right? I mean, can we all take the position that if last season was the highest rated season ever, record profits, never seen such profits, they would not institute this policy. They'd probably say, actually, our new policy is you have to take a knee during the national anthem. It's doing gangbusters for us. So the only reason why they're doing this is because it actually hurt them. You hurt them. And you did this in an organic way, because there weren't really any mainstream, over-the-top boycott calls. There were people who kind of said, like, yeah, I'm just not watching anymore because this is not what I want to do on my Sunday or my Monday night. When's the other big Thursday?
Thursday, Sunday and Monday.
Yep. Tuesday afternoon football. No.
That'd be interesting, but no, they don't do that.
Okay, so even on they were like, no, we don't want this. Now, the players aren't necessarily happy. Certainly the ones who want to protest or make social statements during the particular games. And I do kind of understand that if you do stay in the locker room, let's say you stay in the locker room because you wanted to protest and they're not allowing you to, so you'd rather just stay in the locker room as your protest. It looks bad. Kind of looks bad. And so I kind of understand the player's perspective here. Doug Baldwin was on her sister station, 710 ESPN Seattle. He said he's not surprised the NFL went this route.
You really put your heart out there and say, look, we're trying to do something good for the communities that we represent, that represent us. And it just felt like there was a lack of understanding. And to me, this just further punctuates the tone deafness or the disconnect between the NFL and its players.
What about the tone deafness between the NFL players and the fans? Does that not matter? Understand that you're an employee, yes, of the NFL. The NFL, their clients, their customers, that's us, right? That's you and me, the people who decide to watch the games, or in this case, not watch the games. And so it doesn't matter that there is so-called tone deafness between the NFL owners and the actual players. That doesn't matter, and it shouldn't matter to you, because if you don't have customers going to your games, if you don't have people showing up and watching, buying $10 beers, buying $12 hot dogs, buying the jerseys that say Doug Baldwin on the back of them, you don't have the same career. And so I think it's important to understand that you're acting a little selfishly here. Your league does not succeed. Your job does not exist without the public. And so at least have the conversation, or at least include in the conversation, that the public was not on board with what it is you were doing. He says it's a lack of empathy that got us into the situation we find ourselves in.
There was just a lack of empathy. Instead of disregarding your own emotions for a second, you know, like, you're not, these guys are taking a knee. They're sitting down, taking the knee, raising a fist, whatever it may be. You're not, like, as individuals watching the game, you're not in any threat, okay? There's no threat on your life, okay? Mm-hmm. So there's no reason for you to get extra emotional in this regard without taking a step back to actually understand why these individuals are taking a knee or sitting down or raising a fist.
Okay, I'll let it continue. And by the way, this is from Bob Gross and Tom Show. Are you stepping back and understanding why people are upset? Because it seems like you just disagree that people don't like the political position you're taking. That's okay. But you're getting mad that people disagree. That's on you. We don't have to agree with what it is you're doing. Here's the deal. You have many, 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 many hours in a day. More hours on your own that you can spend protesting whatever it is you want, giving back to the community in any way you want to. You're on the field for about 3 or 4 hours a week for a game in front of the public, in front of cameras. That's the time for you to actually do your job. And your job is not to be an ambassador to the community. Your job is not to be an activist. That's not your job. That's not what you're being paid for. Now, if you want to get a job in activism, go for it. That's awesome. Good for you. Maybe do it part-time. Maybe do it, take on another full-time position. It's on you. But you can't get mad, which is basically what he is, a lack of empathy. There's not a lack of empathy. They just disagree with you. That's all it is. Is it a lack of empathy on your point because you don't agree with the people who are upset? No, of course not. It's just a basic disagreement. We can understand that and we can get over it.
And again, it was the lack of empathy. If we had more of that, in my opinion, I think people would understand, like, we're not trying to be disrespectful to the country.
And yet people believe that you are being, right? So rather than get mad that everyone seems to think that you're being disrespectful to the country and the flag and the troops, not everyone, but obviously a good portion of them, enough to the point where the NFL decided to institute this policy, rather than get mad at them for having that position, why don't you do a better job in explaining your side? And if it's still not working, why don't you take on a different tactic? There's no reason for you to take a knee during the national anthem, right? The national anthem has nothing to do with police brutality or race relations. You've decided to use that as a moment. You're disrespecting the flag to bring attention to a cause that's unrelated to the national anthem. That's on you. Do something else. There are many other things you can do. And here's the deal. Doug Baldwin can show up to a rally and give a speech. Every camera locally will be there, right? Every reporter locally will be there. And that speech will get out. His message will get out. This interview he's doing on Bob Gross and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle is getting out. And so it's not necessary to go into a game and take a knee during the national anthem to express yourself on a variety of positions. Come on this show. I'll happily have that conversation with you. There's no radio show out there. There's no TV network out there that's local that will say no to an interview with Doug Baldwin. So why don't you use that as an opportunity, exploit that opportunity, and tell us your positions on a whole host of things. Just keep it out of the workplace. So Jason Rancho, if you want to join the conversation, send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. That's the NumBetter Tax Resolution Hotline, 1-800-465-8770. 865-8779. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. We are live in the Online Trading Academy studio. If you believe Hillary Clinton is just the worst, send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. So more people are pouring over this Hillary Clinton commencement speech she gave at Yale over the weekend. It's funny because we're already into Thursday and people are still talking about it. I assume, here's my suspicion. It was so boring of a speech that someone tried to watch it and they got about 47 seconds in and then they just reported on the first 47 seconds and moved on because it's like, I can't sit through this entire thing. And so finally they got to the end. And it's interesting because the thing is, the theme of the speech is not particularly fresh, right? This isn't particularly interesting.
Everyone gets knocked down. What matters is whether you get back up and keep going.
Right, it's kind of cliche. She's not even the person who's said it best.
I get knocked down, but I get up again.
I mean, she just basically read a Chumbawamba song.
It's a commencement speech. Like, what's the last one that you heard that's like, oh, that blew my mind?
I like the funny ones when a stand-up comic does it,
mm-hmm.
because at least they make it interesting. Yeah, you're not going to learn anything from any of these things.
You want an entertainer then, as opposed to someone who's trying to inspire you.
I don't want an entertainer. I want to be entertained, I suppose. I want to be interested in what you have to say. And if you're telling me the same thing that I can read off of a calendar that gives you a quote every single day mm-hmm. for inspiration, I'm not necessarily sure you've brought anything to it. I'm not all that moved by the quote unquote celebrity of the person who's there, meaning it's an A-list star or a big okay, mm-hmm. big deal. I couldn't tell you anything that Princess or Queen Noor, I don't even remember who was my commencement mm-hmm. speaker in 2004. I'm assuming she said everything Hillary Clinton just said.
Yes.
Right? It's just boring. And so if that's all you're going to do, and really, this isn't even about the students in most cases. It's about the school so you can raise money. You can say, oh, you know who delivers our commencement speeches? Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, George Bush. Here, yes. give us money. So it's not about the kids. Just get rid of it.
They're speaking to 22-year-olds or 21-year-olds. Like, that's who it's for.
I'm just saying it's the worst. Now, to be fair to Hillary Clinton, they're all bad, right? Or virtually all of them are bad. And especially when you go to a large school, it's the most boring thing in the world, particularly if your last name starts with an A or a Z, right? Because you got to either wait to get your name called, and your poor parents are sitting in the sun just waiting for you to get up there, and you're like 700 kids deep, and you're still only at, you know, the last name Marcus, right? Or your last name is Apple. Jacob Apple goes up there, collects his diploma. Then he just sits there for like 2 hours. It's you know what they should do? As she's speaking or as any of the speakers are up there doing the commencement speech, just have everyone in alphabetical order just collect their diplomas as they're speaking. Just like she's talking and you're collecting your diploma.
Then you're distracted.
You're not paying it. You're already distracted. No one is paying attention. Except to the point where she goes, she still hasn't gotten over the 2016 election.
Let me just get this out of the way. No, I'm not over it.
Yeah, we know.
I still think about the 2016 election. I still regret the mistakes I made.
Yeah, by the way, she still has not admitted to any of the mistakes that she made. Have you heard any of the actual mistakes she claims she made?
I didn't read her book. I presume there's something in there.
No, but the people who did read the book mentioned that she doesn't really go into any detail on skipping out on Wisconsin, for example, which was a huge mistake, right? It's all about how other people failed her. Her mistakes are other people's mistakes in her view, right? She's gone after the media for being unfair to her and sexism for keeping her down. That's not a mistake. I still have yet to hear any of the mistakes.
I still think, though, that understanding what happened in such a weird and wild election in American history will help us defend our democracy in the future. Whether you're right, left, center, Republican, Democrat, independent, vegetarian, whatever. We all have a stake in that.
You hear that one girl? She had a little bit of Elizabeth.
We all have
it. It wasn't that funny. Was she the only vegetarian there? She was talking about me.
No, she just snuck a flask into the ceremony.
That did kind of sound like a drunken listen to that.
We all...
It could have also been just a bird.
It's not a person laughing. It's just a bird with a well-timed screech.
I have a stake in that. So today, as a person, I'm okay, but as an American, I'm concerned.
Okay, we got it. Put it in your next book. Put it on your next speech. Are we done or no? Is she going to come back? Go away!
You're the one that keeps talking about it. It's just a commencement speech she did.
Go away!
You don't have to talk about it if you hate it so much.
Who put it on my show sheet?
Taryn.
Yeah, my bad.
Stop! Save us all. It's a Jason Rant Show. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show. We're live on this Thursday morning in the Online Trading Academy studio. Thank you so much for tuning in. Roger Valdez is a local housing activist who, ideologically speaking, I tend to agree with. In fact, his take on the head tax, I agree with. In Seattle, the head tax, the job-killing head tax. It's a disaster. It's bad for the city. In fact, Saul Spady, one of the small business people who is leading the effort to repeal the tax, is going to be live in studio at 8:30. But Roger Valdez wrote an article in Forbes. And in this article, he says a report that was used by the Seattle City Council to basically justify, or at least help justify, some of the dollars they were asking for to fight homelessness, the dollars they would raise via the head tax, that report didn't actually exist, that the study didn't exist. Here is Roger Valdez on our sister station, Cairo Radio's Dory Monson Show.
I think that there was a study that was being done behind the scenes by McKinsey, and they used whatever they had to lobby the council, but nobody had access to that full report.
So McKinsey, that's the name of this consulting firm that's doing a study about homelessness in the region, the amount of dollars that would be needed in order to make a dent and maybe potentially solve the process, or the crisis. But in this article by Roger Valdez, he went a little bit further than that statement right there. This is a direct quote from his piece. There never was a report. City leaders were citing a report that never existed, reported as fact by reporters that never verified its existence to justify a tax on jobs. And in particular, in this story and in this interview with Dory Monson, he went after Councilwoman Lorena Gonzalez.
The McKinsey spokesperson, when we pressed them, said, don't worry about it, a report's being worked on. Of course, this was almost a week after Lorena had used the figures publicly and said definitively it's going to cost $400 million to solve homelessness.
So yesterday on my blog at ktth.com, I posted his piece. I reported about his piece and about his claims. And then I immediately called Lorena Gonzalez's office to try to get comment. They would not get back to me. They said they would. They didn't. I talked to Roxana there. I just basically said, hey, they're quoting in this Forbes. Could you send me the study? Oh, we'll get back to you. And then I called Dana Robinson Sloat, who's the Seattle Council Communications Director. And she said she would help. And kudos to her, because in the past, she has not been very helpful until I put that public disclosure request in. And then suddenly I'm getting some answers, which I'm grateful for. But on the phone, she initially told me, one, she didn't know if the report was done. She presumed it was, but she also said, hey, it's also common to get summaries of these types of reports. And so maybe that's what Lorena Gonzalez, and that makes total sense to me, right? You give me a 25-page report and a summary, guess what I'm doing first?
What's that?
Reading the summary. I'm going over the summary. Mm-hmm. And if the summary gives me all the salient points, especially if it backs up a belief I already have, I'm going to use that. Now, the difference here is I do think it's unethical to say or imply you read the full report, which indicates you looked at how that summary was reached and how that the end results came to be, that you looked into the actual details on how you came. Like, the context matters. And the context, generally speaking, you're not getting that much context in a summary. Now, if you just read the summary and you still, like, that's totally kosher to me. But if you said, I read a study and the study doesn't actually exist, and you're just basing it on the summary, I think that that's somewhat unethical.
Isn't she also describing a situation where there was an hour-long presentation by the researchers?
Which, that's not what she said, okay. Right? So the quote was that she cited a study. And Roger Valdez says, the study doesn't exist. Now, if a summary exists, then you shouldn't say, I was using a study. You should say, I was using the summary of a study that's to come. Or you give some sort of caveat. But maybe we're playing semantics in. But in this piece in Forbes, Valdez wrote, by May 11th, the day of the committee vote on the $75 million tax, Council member Lorena Gonzalez cited the phantom report from the council dais when she voted for the tax. I found out that that's just not true. She did see it. She likely saw it on May 10th. It gets a little bit tricky here. So go with me for just a moment. So the report that she was referencing exists. I have the report. It's on my desk. I printed it out and everything, and I wasted all the color ink. And now no one can use my printer anymore. But I've got the actual study, at least what they refer to as the study, because it's basically a PowerPoint presentation with a lot of details. It's about 25 pages long. And I looked it over. And she got an email, Lorena Gonzalez, on May 10th, the day before she made this vote, the day before Roger Valdez claims this phantom report was being used to justify an action. She got it on May 10th at 7:04 p.m. That, according to the email that I got, that was forwarded to me by the city, that included the timestamp. A consultant with McKinsey emailed Gonzalez, invited her to this info session that you just referenced, Jacob, this 1 hour to however long it was, to go over the report details. They said it's a lot easier to go over something as dense as this because then if you have questions, we can go over it in real time. And so that meeting presumably happened on the 11th. And in a follow-up email, it said, here's the full study, or here's the study. Now, so two things. Roger Valdez, who's going to be on the show tomorrow, because I called him out in my blog over at ktth.com, and we wanted to have him on today at 7 o'clock. He wasn't able to do it. We'll have him on tomorrow. And he confirmed that he still wants to come on because I did call him out, and I'm sticking by me calling him out. His basic point, I believe now, is going to be that that PowerPoint presentation is not an actual report, that there's something else that McKinsey is working on. That might be true, but the email specifically citing this, what he believes is just a simple PowerPoint presentation, is referred to by McKinsey as the report. And so if Lorena Gonzalez is using the language that McKinsey, this consulting firm, is using, it seems to me that that's totally kosher. That's not disingenuous at all. Now, if they gave her, here's just a summary PowerPoint presentation, and then she said, this is the report, knowing that a fuller report is coming, that's a little bit dishonest. But if McKinsey in an email is saying, here is the report, and then Lorena Gonzalez says, I am looking at a report that McKinsey sent me, that seems kosher to me, right? Is that like a fair assessment?
I think so.
Here's where it gets a little weird. And tell me if you can explain this to me, because I've asked them, and they've not yet gotten back to me. I know that the report exists, whether or not we're calling this, we know that it exists. But the email that they forwarded me that had the attachment of this report, The timestamp was deleted.
Okay.
Now, the first email that says, hey, let's meet tomorrow, the timestamp says May 10th, 7:04 p.m. It's underneath the sent from line in an email.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The email that was forwarded that has the info of the actual report attached to it is missing the timestamp.
Okay. Did you ask about that?
I did. Yeah. And I sent them a text yesterday. And in fact, I'll just pull up the text because she was giving me, it seemed like she was being a little snarky with me because they were upset with my original report that I didn't even have a report. I just posted what Valdez said. And then I said, I'm trying to find out information. And so yesterday at 5:22, I said, can you confirm one detail as I write the follow-up piece? Her response was simply, perhaps. In my head, she's like, oh, perhaps. And so when was the report email sent? The date is missing from the email. No response.
Yeah.
I sent that at 5:22. She responded at 5:25. No response. Mm-hmm. None whatsoever. So this morning I put in a public disclosure request to get the full email.
Right.
I don't doubt that the report exists, but now I'm starting to question when
they actually
received it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they received it, let's say, after this meeting on the 11th, let's say they got it on the 12th, then it is a little bit disingenuous to cite a study you didn't actually see.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they went over the details with you, I think that's kind of important. And it's certainly important, and even more so, if you deleted purposefully the timestamp from the email that you forwarded.
Sure.
Because it wasn't a PDF email that they sent me. They forwarded me the actual email, which means you can
the
manipulate
timestamp.
Some of,
And if they just cleanly forwarded it, that would have
it would all
stamp.
Be in there. Now, again, if you deleted anything from this email, that's a scandal in and of itself, because then that means you're lying. Even if it was a detail that's
By omission, but
yeah, but that's what it is. That's suspicious to me. But I put it all out there, and I called out Roger Valdez, and weirdly, Lorena Gonzalez gets all sanctimonious. She's playing the victim card. And to a degree, she was clearly the victim of Roger Valdez. You know who she wasn't? The victim of me. I didn't victimize her. My report was very clear. In fact, I went out of my way to point out that I wasn't making any of these claims. I was the one who broke the story showing that Valdez was wrong. And yet, color me surprised when on Twitter, Lorena Gonzalez, this councilwoman of Seattle, decided to call me out, and it seems like she's implying that I wrote the original Forbes piece. This is what she said on Twitter, which, by the way, she sent out an email statement that did not include this language. So she did this on purpose, targeting me specifically because she wanted to get her attack dogs on me. Quote, the communications director for the city council has reached out to @JasonRants, which, by the way, you should follow me on Twitter, in hope that these facts will provide the basis to correct this post. Since then, Jason Rantz has publicly redacted his comments about my alleged spread of, quote, fake, end quote, research. I didn't redact anything. I didn't retract anything. Does she not know what that term means? Redact? I'm assuming she meant retract, but I didn't redact anything. I can't redact or retract someone else's story. I didn't report this. I reported on the actual truth. The only reporting I did, and I generally stay away from reporting, but the only reporting I actually did was to point out that Valdez was wrong. My blog specifically said, this is what Roger Valdez says. This is what I'm doing to try to figure out if what he's saying, because this story is spreading, if it's actually true. And the second I found out that, in my belief, in my opinion, Valdez was wrong, not only did I update the blog, we updated every single social media channel that originally pushed out the first blog because I wanted to be fair. I wanted to be fair. Gonzalez does not want to be fair. And what bothers me most about all of this is she can now claim that she's the victim somehow and use that as a means to go after the referendum to overturn the head tax. And then she has the audacity to bring me into this and pretend that I claimed that the research was fake. I went back just to even make sure I didn't quote Roger Valdez with the term fake. The term fake that she's quoting in a tweet doesn't appear anywhere in my blog at all. Not from me, nor from Roger Valdez. This is what she's doing now, is she has decided that she's going to attack someone locally. She's trying to get me to pull the story down, by the way. A city council member says she expects a media member will take down a story that she doesn't like. If you want to see the tweet that she had sent me and maybe respond to her politely to point out that all I did was actually report the truth, text the keyword, what should we do for the keyword? Tweet. Let's text me tweet to 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword tweet to 1-800-465-8770. In return, I'll link you to Lorena Gonzalez's tweet, and I would appreciate a little bit of support because we can't allow this kind of bullying to go on. Text the keyword tweet, T-W-E-E-T, to 1-800-465-8770.
Description documents.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for sending your text messages with the keyword tweet to 1-800-465-8770 so we can go ahead and fact check Seattle council member Lorena Gonzalez, who thinks it's okay to go after me because she didn't like me talking about a story that I didn't have anything to do with, but actually was the first person to state publicly that Forbes got it wrong. So if you want to help and respond to her Twitter attack, because she's getting her progressive lunatics who follow her, she's getting them to attack me, which is what the intent was when you put in my opinion, you tag someone in a tweet and you claim they did something that they didn't do. It's generally speaking a strategy to get folks to criticize and attack that person, bully them into silence, which of course is not going to work. But if you send me the keyword tweet to 1-800-465-8770, I'll send you the tweet directly that Lorena Gonzalez sent, and then you should just hit reply and point out, you know, you're attacking a radio host who actually defended you, even though he doesn't particularly like you. Before we take a break, before we go to the top of the hour, I have to talk about the story out of New Jersey. Because there's a principal there who supposedly got complaints from students over prom tickets. Because on the prom ticket, it said he's inviting the class to, quote, party like it's 1776. Except the event is at the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia. And so part of me was like, oh, he's apologizing because the Constitution didn't get created until 1787. And maybe, you confused the Declaration of Independence with the Constitution. But okay, fine. But people apparently are claiming that this was an insult to African Americans because slavery existed at the time. And so partying like it's 1776 is somehow a slight against African American students. But the thing is, it's not a slight. He should not be apologizing. No one was offended. I've yet to see a single student quoted as saying they were offended. I've seen activists in the community claim that they were offended. I don't even think I saw a single student. But let's say you get one or two students. So? No one is offended by this. We're pretending people are offended. No one was offended. The only people who get upset at things like this are the hypersensitive fringe activists who are professional activists who professionally get upset and professionally make a big deal out of absolutely everything. Dr. Dennis Perry, in this apology letter that he put out on Twitter, said, I especially apologize to our African-American students who I have let down by not initially recognizing the inappropriateness of the wording. There's nothing inappropriate about the wording. It is a common saying, party like it's dot, 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 and you add an individual date. And in this case, can we all at least accept that it wasn't nefarious? Can we at least just agree on that part? There was no nefarious intent here.
Are they suggesting that he did this on the invitations because slavery existed? That was his intention?
The implication is that this language brings up images of slavery, which is somehow inappropriate to celebrate, which of course it is, but that's not what he was doing. He wasn't celebrating anything but the theme.
That's not within the context at all.
Context doesn't matter to crazy people. That's the thing. Context doesn't matter to crazy people. Lloyd Henderson, the president of the Camden County NAACP East Chapter, told a newspaper the tickets are another example that the culture of the schools is, quote, one where African-American students need not considered, along with the rest of the school. Can anyone give me a date after a party like it and have it not be offended? Give me a year. Give me a random year.
1992.
You can't have 1992 because that's too close to the Columbine shootings.
2020.
You can't have 2020 because it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, that's the point.
Party like it's 2020. How do you? Yes. You know what's going to happen in 2020? We might still have President Trump as president. He might be serving his second term. We can't celebrate that. Give me another one.
The intention of the context is obviously that Trump would not be president. That's the idea.
Now you're offending the conservatives.
Oh yeah, they're not worried about that.
Yeah, exactly. So you can't do party like it's anymore. You can't end that. You can't. The 90s or the early 2000s, that is sullied by school violence. The 80s and the early 90s and even into the 2000s, that's sullied by the fact that gay kids and transgender kids weren't really allowed to openly express their love at these proms. 2018 you can't do because then you'll say, oh, party like it's 2018. Oh, well, what about all of the marginalized voice? What about all of the dreamers and immigrants here who feel like ICE is just going to show up to the prom and deport individuals? Show me your tickets and your papers. You can't actually win, right? So how about we just relax a little bit, look at the context and how crystal clear it is, and stop pretending to be angry about everything. Did you find a single student who was upset at least?
Oh, no.
I haven't seen a single student who's complained. Not a single student who's complained. And I have to assume one is out there, but it seems weird that I can't find any of those quotes. It's the Jason Rantz Show.